Welcome to Kinfolk Lore. After nearly 2 years of eager anticipation, we're excited to finally be covering season 3 of The Witcher.
Woo!
Which arrived in your Netflix feed last week. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul. And for those of you who are joining us for the first time, you should go back and binge all our other episodes. You should do that. Like, just do it. We're cousins who love to explore the worlds of fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've discovered the multiverse of His Dark Materials, examined the bending of Avatar, The Last Airbender, and the legend of Korra, uncovered the secrets of Lovecraft Country, and navigated the conflicts of the House of the Dragon. You can find all of our season 1 and 2 coverage of The Witcher in your podcast feeds.
We're looking forward to catching up with our evil adjacent phase, visiting the most boring wizarding school in all of fiction. And most importantly, hearing Yaskier's new tunes now that his muse Geralt is back in the picture. The Witcher Season 3 is being released in 2 volumes, with episodes 1 through 5 released last week and episodes 6 through 8 coming out on July 27th. We will be covering episodes 1 and 2 today, so spoiler alert, we'll be discussing spoilers from the first 2 episodes and maybe some light comparisons to the book. However, we will not be spoiling episodes 2 through 5, which we will be breaking down in our upcoming episodes in the coming weeks.
Dear friends, if your time with Kinfolk Lore has taught you anything, it's that the world may be changing underneath our feet, but damn it, we will have adult content. So if you're like yarping and you want to know the most important information, like, hey, hold on, Yen, Geralt, are you two fucking again? You've
subtle yarping,
to
subtle.
The right place. Don't break my shite. All right, let's go. I love it.
So good.
He's so good. It was so, and so, like, it's like exactly his style. No subtlety at all. So the first episode is Sherwood. The season begins with Geralt, Ciri, and Yen on the run. Geralt and Ciri don't trust Yen yet, and Geralt won't speak to her at all. Keeps putting her in the outhouse, a separate house, separate places to stay.
I just want to know how every place that they find has, like, separate quarters with a door.
What the fuck is Geralt doing that he has so much coin that he's all like, for your discretion?
Yes, I have questions about where this money is coming from, because it doesn't seem like he's picking up many commissions.
No, and he's like, and Yarpin's like, yo, I want to be paid for my fucking discretion, okay? Like, let's go. Like, I want to be paid. Oh, man. So anyway, Ciri is taking daily magic lessons. And Yen is updating Geralt through numerous dear friend letters because he's not speaking to her. The trio moves from village to village, attempting to stay one step ahead of those who seek them. Eventually, Yen breaks down Geralt's defenses and joins him and Ciri for regular dinners, which is, like, amazing to see. We've wanted to see them as a family forever. Thank you, God. Here we are. So good.
It only took 3 seasons and 4 years.
Exactly. So Yarpin Zigrin, who has been bringing them regular supplies, convinces them to attend the Beltane Festival in the village nearby, where Ciri is attacked by a jackapace sent by Rience. So, you know, Ciri is pretty hyped about this because it is Ciri's birthday. And like we've alluded to in previous seasons, it's also Yen's birthday. And it was nice to see Geralt remember and wish her a happy birthday. They both were born during the Beltane Festival years ago. Different times, obviously, not the same age, but the same day. Ciri has the idea that they're going to need to draw Rance out by setting a trap. They enlist our dear friend, ourselves, Yaskier, to be Ciri's decoy escort. Meanwhile, Francesca and what's left of her followers are starving in the woods and desperately looking for Cirilla, their new hope. Speaking of the North, let's talk about this guy who, I don't know, man. He's giving me serious, like, discount, double-check Joffrey vibes. King Visimir of Redania. is growing restless with Dijkstra and Philippa's efforts to find Ciri. He appoints his brother Radovid to join the search. Separating from Yarpin's caravan, Yen, Geralt, and Ciri end up visiting the ruins of Sherwood, where Geralt and Yen tell Ciri two perspectives of the same story. This is the part we were talking about in the preview episode, where he talks about neutrality, and they kind of remixed it for the dialogue between them, because Yen is obviously not there in the book, but it's just really a great dialogue here. And they talk about Elrond, the elven warrior. They're attacked by Rians and then by Francesca's elves during the end of this conversation. And a full fight breaks out between Rians and his goons and Geralt and Yen and Ciri and the rest of the caravan. They defeat the elves and Rians' men. Then they decide to split up. Geralt, like, breaks his wrist, which is fucking super aggressive. Why didn't he just kill him?
He breaks his wrist and then he goes and gets his sword. And then he walks by him and goes through the portal. Bruh, how many times have I seen you stick a sword in someone's neck? Like, just finish that.
He should have finished it right there. I didn't understand it either. Like, maybe he was concerned about getting stuck over there. I don't know.
And then, like, a few hours later, he's like, I have to finish Rians. What?
What? Yeah.
I can't do it. Anyway, go on. This was like my first, like, what is even happening here?
Well,
go
the
on.
Other first one was like Dara and Ciri staring each other down and being like, hey, hey. And then that's like Ciri's motivation to like start kicking ass is that she saw Dara.
I want to unpack Dara and Ciri stuff later. Yeah. But so let's put a pin in that. But I was the Dara Ciri almost reunion that never was. I have a lot to say.
This whole thing is wild. The Dara, the don't kill Rance, but so we can have him in play for the rest of the season because we, you know, reasons. Yen being able to hold open this dark portal was pretty normal Yen, but being able to wash fucking Francesca, wild shit. Wild
Francesca's
shit.
Francesca's like, hey, Yen's like, no.
Wild shit. Oh my God.
It was a great exchange between Yen and Francesca, though. The she belongs with Yen responding, me.
Yeah.
I liked that a lot. But this whole battle, while dope, I had like story questions about it.
Yeah, for sure. So Geralt decides, as they decide to split up, that he's going to go find Rance. And Yennefer really makes the case that the best place for Yen and Ciri to go is Aretuza. And, you know, she asks for Geralt's, you know, trust, which is, you know, it's rocky right now for whatever reason. We all have our thoughts about that. But, you know, eventually it is the best choice. Like, in Ciri's, you know, sad to see Geralt go. Yen and Ciri head off in their way. Geralt heads his way. Yaskier decides to make a deal that if Philippa and Radovid can get rid of Rance for them, he will help convince Geralt to bring Ciri to Redania for protection.
Episode 2, Unbound. In a village near Aretuza, Yen sends a message to Tisaya. And while waiting for her, Ciri has a vision when she encounters a royal messenger, Apokat, and predicts an arrow will be shot at him, which does happen later in the episode. Yen tells Ciri how dangerous it is to share her visions, and they go to see Yen's old friend, who I've been waiting for, Kira Metz.
She's in there.
Witcher 3 fame. She's kind of a mess, which is why I love her.
Oh, man.
They're seeking a portal to Aretuza, but instead they encounter some, you know, human trafficking. Sure.
What was he going to do to the dwarf? Oh, it's so terrible.
Yeah,
oh.
The stuff that Ciri saw was really awful.
Yeah.
Ciri decides she cannot allow it and meddles again, causing them to have to go on the run. The ensuing fight leads Yen to show Ciri where she is from, what she's really been through, because Ciri seems to think that Yen is just this all-powerful sorceress. So Yen gives her a glimpse of her past.
I love this part because this is when she's really getting into calling her ugly one when she's acting like an ass, right? And it's like, it's really like, you know, dope. And it's dope to see kind of like, Yen's growth and how she talks about it. We'll talk about, I know we're going to talk about that more later on, but it's really, really good to see like the dynamics between the two of them. I love it.
Yeah, I do too. This wasn't the, all of the stuff of Siri and Yen in this episode was great. Mm-hmm. Geralt and Yaskier go to visit Kondra and Fen to find out about Rience. The detectives tell Geralt that there's a castle where they've heard the mage that's working with Rience has been detected. Geralt knows it's a trap. He tells his new horse, who has no name, I'm assuming, they better not call that horse Roach. You know, he's like, it's a trap.
But
it's
every one of Geralt's horses are Roach. Like, this would be consistent. He just names them Roach. What's up with that?
That's anyway, that's a really heartbreaking part of the game. But he better not call this horse Roach. I'll be very upset. So he goes in anyway, and what he discovers is something that's absolutely terrifying. Someone has been experimenting on young girls who look like Siri. Mm. One of them is still alive, but the others have been turned into possibly the most horrible monster we've ever seen on this show.
Yeah, super.
I've never seen anything like it. I'm not even going to describe it.
It gave me like Nightmare on Elm Street vibes.
It was disgusting.
Yeah, it was gross. It was super gross.
Let's head to Nilfgaard, where our girl Frangilla, not looking so great.
Having a blast,
though. Actually, this may
though.
Be Sintra. Sorry, it's not Nilfgaard. It's a Nilfgaardian prison, but she's still in Sintra. She's not looking so great in prison. She's having a tough time. She's being forced to drink all of the wine that the emperor will eventually taste to make sure it's not poisoned.
I mean, there are worse punishments unless you get the poison batch. Like, if you there are worse punishments. If you're like, yo, you got to stay in this place. You're just going to drink a bunch of wine and hang out until you can't drink wine anymore and just pray that you don't get the poison batch. I think, you know, pretty cool.
I have questions about this too. So many of the other prisoners die from drinking too much. Or are they drinking poison? It's not clear. How do you know if they just died because their organs started failing or they had poison?
They have no idea.
They have no idea. So this whole practice seems flawed to me.
She's like, they got another one. Frangilla. She was like, there's another one. I felt for her, though. Like, honestly, it was one of the moments where you really started to... I was since last season, but this one made me feel for her a little bit.
This is horrible.
Yeah.
So she uses the fact that prisoners die to her advantage and escapes in a body bag. In Aretusa, the Brotherhood of Mages can't agree on the best course of action for the current conflicts in the North. Triss also discovers that there's a student named Nyssa missing and finds blood on the wall in her room.
That's funny, because there's also like a prophecy in another story that we all love. Nyssa, that's fucking missing too from a lot of Game of Thrones 7. Like Game of Thrones season 8, Game of Thrones season 7. Wow, maybe it all went missing. Maybe the Grand Northern Conspiracy expands across worlds. That's it. Anyway.
Skotertel leader Gallatin links up with his old buddy Kahir, who it honestly was nice to see again. I was happy to see Kahir. Kahir's not in prison, but he's been demoted to possibly the lowest level of the Nilfgaardian military. In their conversation, Gallatin tells Kahir about Francesca's plan to find Cirilla. Yaskier, who's, you know, been developing a little relationship with Radovid, tells him about the meeting that he and Geralt had with Cadenor and Fen. Radovid shares this information with Dijkstra. And then in the very next scene, Rience visits them and kills them.
And then there's like a mysterious owl that flies through the portal afterwards.
I wonder who that owl would be.
I mean, they haven't really explained that other than she hasn't transformed into the owl this whole fucking season, and she was an owl all last season, so who knows?
It's very confusing. Very confusing.
Yeah. So this is the point where we just tell you that for those that are like, what the fuck happened? Why did he have a bird fly through a portal? If you're not tracking this, that is Philippa, who turns into an owl and also is in the form of a mage, right? So both. She's a mage that can turn into an owl. you may be tracking this already, but it's just good to give the people who are not some backdrop from last season. So what do you think? What do you think about this?
Wait. Oh. We just lost two characters. We need to take a moment here and pour one out for Codriner and Fenn.
This goes out to all our fallen homies, yo.
Come on, low liquor. Don't let the chin get like that, y'all.
It was a tough scene because I thought the cat was going to get got too. The cat survived.
Yeah, I felt like Rance, we learned something about Rance. We learned that he's a cat lover, that he was just bluffing. We also learned that he just like doesn't appreciate intelligence gathering. Like, why would you blow these people know everything? Like, they got so much information you can get from them. They were good to keep alive. I don't know why he thought that was the right move to just blow.
Yeah,
them up.
It's sort of silly of Rance, but I don't know. Rance is like in his feelings about this whole mission. So, I mean, I guess he's lost a lot of people along the way. He got a scarred up face, so maybe he's not feeling this commission so much.
Yeah, I mean, listen, RIP to the intelligence duo that also has a name that sounds like a law firm. RIP. So what do you think?
Really like these two episodes. There were some problems, but I think those are season two problems.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, all of my objections to this is about stuff that happened in season two, which at the time I really loved. But now, in hindsight, I'm like, why did we even do season two? Season two feels really like a different story.
Yeah, it feels like this show has its legs under it in season three in a way that the storyline jumping didn't in season one, because people were like, what the fuck's going on, including us, until we like actually like dug into it and we're like, okay, we're tracking it. Season two felt like, oh, this is cool, but we couldn't understand the need to take away Yen's magic. We couldn't understand, you know, what they were doing with Francesca, who then now they've pivoted. Like, she wasn't all powerful, like kind of like could do anything with magic and was more powerful than mages. And now all of a sudden she can get washed by a mage just really simply. So it's like, I don't know if they're trying to communicate something to us this season that Yen is more powerful than we even understand, which is, you know, they've kind of intimated many times, but yeah, there's a lot of things that happen in season two. We haven't even gotten to the freaking monoliths now, and that's gonna be that was a problem. We're kind of figuring out what the hell's going on with that. So there's a lot, but I think for me, this is my favorite season so far. And I know we're only talking about one and two, but so far, at the halfway point, leaving some caution, I am happy with this season.
Me too. I was immediately happy with the fact that humor entered the show again. Mm-hmm. Season two had a different tone. It was very dark in some ways. Mm-hmm. We start out here with a lot of humor that's actually quite funny. You know, Yarpin is hilarious. Yaskier is also very funny. Mm-hmm. When Yarpin goes to see Yaskier and he can't remember his name. Yeah. I had a flashback to the West Wing in Lord John, who could never remember Leo's name.
Yeah.
Well, no, he could remember Leo's name, but he couldn't remember Leo's job.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's great. It's super great. And I love that he's all like, what do you need from me? He was like, nothing, because I have good taste and ears at work. I was like, yo, Yarpin is wild. Oh, man. So, I mean, one of the keys in this season, though, for me, is the growth, the depth that we began in season two, but it was more like a manipulative kind of like thing that eventually evolved into like Yen understanding that she needed to do something to change her course. But this deepening of the relationship with Yen and Siri and how it develops in these episodes, I mean, throughout the season, but we're sticking to these episodes where Yen is saying things that we've never heard her say. Magic isn't everything. What?
Yeah. And I like that Siri calls her on it.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, wait a second, you just tried to kill me.
Yeah, yeah, for magic. Like, yeah, for magic. To get your magic back.
I think what we're supposed to take from that is that Yen now understands that now that she has this family unit that's formed, now that she has connection, which is what Yen always was seeking, that the magic is not as important.
Yeah, agreed.
I think Yen would still agree that having magic is important to her identity, but it isn't everything about her identity.
And I think subtly, I agree. And I think suddenly what we're starting to see, what I took from that is that she's wanted, right, to be a mother, and she's wanted to have a family, like you're saying, and that, you know, is something that's also driven her besides the power and the magic. And having this opportunity with Siri to grow their relationship, she's kind of like, it's not that it's not important, but it's that what's become almost more important to her, and she's willing to risk a lot more for, is keeping Siri safe. She really wants her to be safe. And and I think like that's a big part of why she's saying that. I mean, so Siri sucks at magic right now. She's really bad. She's really not great. She's having a rough time. What do we take from that?
Well, Yen also was not good at magic at first, right?
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, I think it's drawing that, there's some of it is drawing that parallel between Yen and Siri both not being particularly strong at the beginning of their studies, also being quite resistant to the studies.
Yeah.
I think Siri's magic is different, and Yen doesn't know how to teach her because it's not the same type of channeling of chaos that Yen and Triss learned.
Yep.
And we know that like Siri can't do, you know, Witcher signs. She can't, there's like certain things she just doesn't have access to. We know that from season two, when Geralt and Triss were kind of trying to unpack Siri's magic. She definitely has power, but how to channel that power, how to use it, how to control it, which is something that Siri's actually had quite a bit of training on, right? Mm-hmm. Malsak used to try to help her, and as he helped Pavetta. But other than trying to subdue it, I'm not sure he really made any progress with her. Then she had Triss try to help her. Triss got shook and ran back to snitch to Tisea.
Oh my gosh.
And now Yen is doing her very best work, teaching her the words, teaching her how to use all of the magic of the elements, but still Siri is not able to make it work in her favor. So I think this is going to be an ongoing thing with Siri. Like, she needs to figure out how to unlock some of her powers.
Yeah, definitely that. And I think that, you know, Yen even talks a little bit about when they're talking about magic not being everything. It's not about just having access to it. It's about also controlling chaos, like, and controlling how you do. And I think that's going to be, that speech has some ramifications, right? Or later, I think, for Siri, not just in general in the world, is that she's learning to control, maybe not chaos, but control the force that she has at her disposal. You know what I mean? Like the energy she has at her disposal. So
yeah, and Yen also talked to her about balance, which I was like, wait, is this the Avatar? Like what? But she, all jokes aside, like, she's also trying to teach Siri something that I think is a little bit more than what Geralt is trying to teach Siri, which is, it's not just about taking neutrality. It's not just about staying out of the fight. It's about understanding the consequences and the trade-offs of getting into the fight and using your power. And I think when Yen is talking about this, she's not just talking about magical power. I think she's also talking about soft power.
Yeah.
Like using that, her power, her strength to act when it's appropriate, which is something that I think Siri needs to figure out. Because while I don't think that she was wrong in preventing a child to be trafficked, I do think her approach was not the smartest. And I do think that she can't run around the continent telling everybody when they're going to die.
Yeah, I agree. No, I 100% agree. And I think, like, I think that what Yen kind of alludes to for the first time, I'm really hearing her say, like, yeah, my one action I took in doing what I did set off a chain of events that also actually impacted your life. What, and the reason that we're here doing this. And so, like, yes, there's consequences. And when she talks about, when she goes into, yes, you saved one, but all these villagers are going to get killed and they're going to be they're going to come after us, and then they're going to put them out to fight, like, in a war that they're not prepared to fight in. And then some of them will die if not injured. All the things she lays out, like, understanding fully how this all works. And it's really strong, because it's a compelling case for, like, it's not about neutrality. It's about making choices. It's about, like, this is a little place where she's very, I think, kind of deviating from, like, you know, Geralt's kind of like neutrality. She's like, you didn't have to do what you did. You chose to do what you did. And you need to understand the difference between just, like, you know, doing what's just and also making a choice that has ramifications, even if it is just or unjust. So,
yeah, I think this conversation takes us back to episode one, season one.
Mm-hmm.
The conversation between Stregobor.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wish he. So can we? I hope he's dead by the end of the season. I can't deal with Stregobor. Anyway, this conversation between Stregobor and Geralt about the lesser evil. Mm-hmm. Geralt doesn't believe in that principle, right? He doesn't see that. He sort of is like, it's not my job to decide who is the lesser evil, who is the greater evil here. However, Yen, I think what Yen is trying to tell her is that when you have to make those decisions, you have to try to play out the consequences. And while I don't agree with Yen's reasoning about releasing Kahir, starting off this chain of events, I don't buy that. I can't tell if the story is trying to tell us that that's what happened, or if Yen is just taking too much upon herself, because Yen has a tendency to center herself in a lot of ways.
That's how I took it. But yeah, if the story's trying to tell us that, I totally agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, it doesn't really track. But yeah. I think what she's saying is, I made a decision and it had this impact. And many people got hurt, and, like, maybe the best thing would have been that Kahir did die, that I did execute him. You have to play out the consequences of making that choice. Mm-hmm. It's a great conversation, and I think that this like tension between acting and inaction is the larger theme of the show. I mean, it comes up so frequently, and it often comes up in the very first episode of each season, that I think that it's definitely something that I'd like to see where the show lands on this. Like, what is the right choice? Like, I don't think it's a good choice to let a child be trafficked, because that's called complicity. But mm-hmm. like, if the fallout of that is that all these other people die, like, how do you make that choice? It's a horrible choice to have to make.
Well, it's so interesting, because, like, we've mentioned it already in there, like, about balance, and we made a joke about whether or not, you know, are we talking about the Avatar? But that is a central theme in that story that I think they're, I would say, borrowing from, but it's, like, kind of parallel to that of, like, you know, when we talked about Neutral Jing in our Atla episodes, and kind of how Bumi, like, dealt with the threat that he was under. It's very interesting that a lot of stories are examining this. Action versus, you know, like, can you have action through inaction? Can you, you know, what are you... I'm fascinated to see where they go with this topic. You know what I mean? And if they have a different take.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I think it's a really interesting theme.
Yep. So, there. Speaking of neutrality and action, and, you know, there are a lot of factions after Ciri, a lot, and they're not neutral. They know, all of them have, like, their wants and why they're doing it. So we got the elves, we got Redania, we got Rance, who may be working for somebody who's connected to Nilfgaard, or maybe under the employ of somebody else. We're gonna find this out. And we have Nilfgaard, obviously. So we'll start with the easiest, lowest hanging fruit. They've been the big kind of like bad throughout this. Let's start with Nilfgaard. Like, Amir's like burning portraits of Pavetta, of his former life, and holds on to little baby Siri. I mean, he is a strange, odd bird.
What a weirdo.
Like, it's just like, what the fuck? What the fuck?
It was almost as if the show was just like, hey, remember this guy? Like, what a weirdo.
Yeah.
I don't understand Amir's character at all. He was better when he was a hedgehog. I just don't understand.
It's so freaking crazy. Like, I don't understand why he burns all those pictures. Like, it's just wild. Like, maybe it's supposed to be like, I you know, God, I hate to go meta because we try to stay out of those weeds when we're in the story. But I will say, it just made me feel like the story, the people telling the story, the showrunners and the writers were like, hey, we need to remind the audience who this person is, like you just said, to the other characters. And it works, but it's just like, what a weird flex. I'm just gonna burn my dead wife, who I may or may not have played a part in killing. I'm gonna just burn her picture, like, super wild.
Anyway. Yeah, it was unclear to me what he was doing. Also, why was he keeping those portraits to begin with? I don't know. Whatever. I don't think we're supposed to look too deeply into it, but it was just like a weird way for him to pop back up in the show. I much would have preferred him popping up like he does later, talking to Kahir, right? Yeah. But anyway, what a weirdo. I don't know what the deal with Amir is. I also am not really clear. I don't think the show wants us to know why it is that Amir wants Siri. I think that we're supposed to think that this is some kind of just like he wants his daughter back. Yeah. But Amir clearly knows that Siri has magical abilities because he was married to Pavetta. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, I'm sure Kahir told him that this girl singing, screaming, toppled a monolith. So I'm not sure what we're supposed to take from why he's after Siri. And to be honest with you, I think that's one of the weaknesses of the show, is that we don't fully understand why everyone's after her. It seems like there's some confusion. Like, the Redanians appear to be after her for her political gain.
I think
right?
That's short-sighted. I know exactly why Redania is after her, because it's clear by how they've been funding Yaskier that they enjoy the arts, that they are purveyors of the arts, and Siri's high octave range is unbelievable. All right? If they can get hits out of freaking Yaskier, they're going to blow everyone's socks off when they get a hold of Siri. So, like, that's what they're doing.
Yeah, I think that, like, Redania is looking to get Siri for the political purposes, right? Yeah. Like, I guess Vizimir was going to marry her.
Was he already married? But he's already married.
Well, minor details.
Minor details.
And I guess that was the plan. Like, he was going to marry her and lay claim to Syntra. I'm not clear that that's what Philippa and Dijkstra are in this for. I tend to think that Dijkstra just wants to continue to control Vizimir. Mm-hmm. But Philippa, I think, has more information than everyone else. It's not really... I'm not really clear about what she gets out of all of this.
Yeah, I'm not clear what she gets on this, especially not in these episodes. And I definitely think, I think you're right. I think, like, Dougal McDeistra is trying to keep power for Redania, and having the information, and by securing the Lion Cub of Syntra, you keep, you know, Syntra in the fold. You have you can, you know, create. Redania has more power. There's a lot of politics at play with in his mind. Unfortunately, though, we won't know. He's only able to think clearly after he gets whipped by Philippa, and tortured. So a lot of 50 shades of Redania going on between the two of them. Pretty weird.
Yeah, I'm good with no more of those scenes.
Yeah, no more.
I'm really, I hope we've seen the last of those scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're trying to show us something about Philippa too, which is pretty wild. She says as long as she gets to choose when she gets back, and that's what she, yeah, it's she's in control. That's I don't know. It's weird, but yeah, I could do with less of that. What about the elves? The elves seem to have on the surface, even though she murked children, they seem to have a noble. They're like, hey, this is the person who's going to lead our people, almost like a messiah thing going on.
Yeah, the conflict between Francesca and Gallatin is, I think, probably the most straightforward conflict. They are two people leading different factions of the same people with the same struggle with different worldviews. Gallatin is kind of like, listen, we can continue to follow Nilfgaard, do their bidding, use them for our advantage. Once they have conquered the continent, our people will be able to freely roam. We won't have to flee the northern kingdoms. We won't be as persecuted.
Yeah.
Makes sense. It's sort of the straightforward path. Francesca's like, nah, we're not trying to share the continent again with humans because we can't trust them. Obviously, she knows, she's looking to the histories. And so we have been prophesied this warrior, this weapon that can free us all. I don't disagree with either of them, right? Like, I think, you know, Gallatin's point of view is the more, I wouldn't say peaceful, but like diplomatic point of view. Like, we're not trying to kill everyone, just the people who are killing us. However, you know, I think that you could make a case for a group that has endured essentially genocide at the hands of many of the northern kingdoms, but especially Calanthe.
Yeah.
That Francesca's not off base either. My one complaint about this is that it gets lost a little bit. Like, this plot line about their conflict doesn't really get any time to breathe.
Well, because when you put a character who's supposed to have such a pivotal differing point of view, like, you know, the leader of the squirrels, Gallatin, we just met him like beginning of this season, so it's like very, very hard to like wrap your mind around like what is the real conflict? Like, why? I mean, we get the conflict, but it doesn't have the depth, in my opinion. That's my feeling. It doesn't.
Yeah,
have the
it
depth.
Doesn't. And I think also it would have been helpful, instead of getting it in passing conversation, the understanding that while Francesca and her people were held up in Sintra, living, you know, safely inside the walls of that city, his people were doing guerrilla warfare.
Yeah,
exactly. Nilfgaard's bidding. And so, of course, their worldviews are different. They've both been involved in this conflict in different ways.
Yeah.
This is a big deviation for Francesca from the book. I won't say too much because we're not at that point in the book. But when we get to, I guess, episode 5, I want to unpack where Francesca is at that point in A Time of Contempt. Because she's definitely not living on the streets and you know, rationing food.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll put a pin in that one too, and just wait till we get to that point in the story here. Last person is Rance, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. It's just very simple. We just don't know who he's working for. We don't know why they want Ciri, and we have no real clue. It's being hinted, but we just don't know.
Yeah. This is the big mystery of this season. It was also the big mystery of last season. I need this to wrap up. Like, I need it to wrap up. We got bigger fish to fry. One thing we do know is that he's not working for the Wild Hunt, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I need this storyline to kind of wrap. Rients is... Well, first of all, they recasted him, and I didn't even notice until, like, his second appearance. But I'm a little bit confused about why his boss is looking for Ciri. I guess I'm a little bit confused about why, like, Lydia's not in the story yet. Like, I don't, like, she was the go-between. I don't know. It just seems like a loose end to me.
Yeah, agreed. I totally agree. I mean, they focused on him, and obviously Geralt only wants to kill him the way he wants to kill him. He couldn't kill him right when he had the chance. So we'll see. I don't know. But those are the folks that are kind of like after Ciri. So let's talk about Team Ciri. Let's talk about the family.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Yen is having a harder time adapting to this parenting thing than Geralt had in season 2. However, some good parenting from Yen in these episodes.
I agree.
Some not great parenting from Geralt.
Well,
the girl makes a pretty dress with her bare hands.
God.
Did Geralt not see season 2? Remember when she got dressed all nice, to impress Triss, and the other witchers made fun of her? You don't remember that, Geralt? I remember it. She just wants to look pretty. Like, you couldn't just say you look nice, but also you need to cover your hair.
Yeah, I don't understand why that was so hard. And but it just comes right out when he sees Yen. He's like, yeah, I didn't get it. I was just...
It's not very nice that Ciri told him what to say, and then he used it 2 seconds later on Yen.
Yeah.
Ciri's like, here's what we want to hear. And he's like, yes, I shall employ this on a different person.
Oh, God. Oh, my goodness. And the part that, but with the relationship with Geralt and Yen, I really, really love the good nights conversation.
Yeah, it's so good.
Oh, why? The question about why each of them left before dawn, and the theme that's been cropping up with Yen is, and maybe it's because she's not been this way so many times with different people, she's just really just saying what is real, like how she feels, being just like super, for the most part, authentic about things. And she was like, yeah, I was scared of what might happen, you know, like if we really tried, what would happen in our relationship? And I was like, dang, that's like some honesty. Like she wasn't sure whether it was, you know, about her or the djinn's magic.
Yeah.
Geralt fails that one too. He doesn't really say much.
Well, he doesn't have time, yeah. Right? Because then they're interrupted. But I love this conversation for a couple of reasons. It's long confirmed that these two met regularly between the Something More and the djinn, which the show kind of insinuated through dialogue, but we never got a sense of how many times they met, right? Like, they have this conversation about you're going to leave in season 1, right? When... Mm-hmm. They meet on the dragon hunt. Mm-hmm. However, it's not clear, like, the extent of their relationship at that point. Like, is this the second time they're meeting? Is this the third time they're meeting? I mean, Geralt kind of says, like, every time I see you, I end up saying things that, you know, I end up speaking more than I would speak in a whole year. But it's not really clear if this is just a one or two off. This conversation gives us complete insight. These two were on again, off again for a minute.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like you said, it's insinuated, but it's never kind of, they're doing better of trying to confirm that was what was happening. And that's why Yarpin's, hold on. Two fucking again? Oh, it's so good. Oh, it's so good.
I wouldn't blame you. Spring is coming.
Spring is coming!
I love him.
Oh, man.
He's so good.
And
but this conversation was really sweet. And also, I think it sets up that conversation, that voiceover, the dear friend letter that Geralt leaves Yen when they split up. That's basically like, I never really connected to anyone before, so I never really felt real fear. Now I know what real fear is because I'm part of a family, because I know that we belong together. Mm-hmm. That confirming that Ciri is the something more that they needed.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it's beautiful. The "We Belong Together," the letter, the way he wrote the letter. It's super amazing. Yeah, tears, like little
yeah,
tears.
Yeah, no, there were a few.
Yeah.
There were a few. I definitely teared up multiple times when Siri and Yen were fighting. Like, there's some really beautiful moments in this. And from season two, really, I remember tearing up only really once, which was when Taseya and Yen were reuniting. And I'm getting the same kind of vibe. Like, Yen is almost like Siri's Taseya. In a lot of ways, Taseya is the only mother that Yen has really ever known.
It's 100% feeling like it's a parallel, because I think it's why Yen is starting to see, she's saying some of the things because she sees a lot of herself in Siri, and she's like, oh, this is what Taseya was going through with me. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. And so I think like it's totally paralleling that.
And even bringing that to the conversation between Taseya and Vilgefort, when he says, you know, Yen and I have a lot in common, blah, blah, yada, yada, yada. I won't go through all of it, but we both love you. I was like, who's cutting onions in here?
Yeah. Yeah. Although I don't like that guy, so that's all right. I was definitely feeling like that emotion about Yen, like you're saying, but I was just like, oh God, we need somebody else to be the messenger. Kill the messenger. Sorry.
Can we unpack, since we're talking about Vilgefort, can we unpack a little bit what the conversation between the mages?
Yeah.
Because I also thought that was a little bit confusing.
Yeah. Let's do it.
This conversation that interrupts Taseya and Triss taking the students to their lessons or whatever they were doing with them is all over the fact that King Henstel of Caedwin does not want to support the other northern kingdoms. Mm. So Sabrina is his mage. She's part of his court, which I don't know if we previously knew that from the show. But she's basically saying, I can't get him to do it. And the others, from where we come into the conversation, I think are saying he has to.
Yeah.
Like, the Northern Kingdoms will fall if they don't get the support of Caedwin. Obviously, Philippa is not part of this conversation. So Sabrina came to deliver this message. Philippa is not part of the conversation, and Redania has the largest military, which they tell us multiple times through these two episodes. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what the conflict between Redania and Caedwin is, or if Redania is in as bad shape as the other Northern Kingdoms, but we do hear that clearly Temeria, which is where Foltis is in rough shape. They probably took the biggest losses from the Battle of Sodden. They don't have enough grain. They're not doing great. Stregobor,
nicer guy.
What? Well, you know, whatever. I'm not sad for Foltis.
No, but I'm sad for the people. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
Stregobor seems to want Triss to head back to Temeria so that Foltis can go begging for help. I don't know what Stregobor is playing at here, but his main message is this is about the elves.
Super one note. Like, one, just like
one, I'm like, dude.
Yeah.
Dude, first of all, this dude has an unhealthy obsession with princesses, because he also is the one who brings up Cirilla.
Yeah.
And he has an unhealthy obsession with elves.
It's ridiculous.
It's absurd. What's not clear to me is where Vilgefort falls in this, because at the end of the day, Taseya basically ends the conversation and says, this is not how we make decisions. We make decisions together, and also, shut up, we're trying to teach these girls how to channel chaos.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that, I think that Vilgefort is, he's manipulating. It's very clear, like, he's manipulating something. It's not clear what. It's not clear what his aims are totally yet, but something feels manipulative about the way he's positioned himself in all of these arguments that we've seen so far, and who he's positioned himself to. I don't think it's accidental that he's positioned himself as closely to Taseya. You know what I mean? So we'll see.
Yeah, I guess I wish this conversation happened the way the season one conversation about who, which mage was being placed with which kingdom played out, like more calmly with each faction kind of saying why they agreed or disagreed. That was very clear to me. Stregobor and I forget his name, Fringilla's uncle, did not want Yen to go to Irden. Was that where she was supposed to go?
She wanted to go to Irden.
Right, and that's where she ends up going.
Okay.
So Yen ends up going to where Irden, which is where she wanted to be.
Okay.
But before that, there's this unpacking of like why it's not a good idea to send her so close to Syntra, because Syntra obviously is at that time led by Calanthe, who really doesn't like elves, and Yen is, you know, one quarter elf or something like that. I don't remember exactly the breakdown, but she has elven blood in her. And you know, Stregobor makes his comment and basically says she should go to Nilfgaard. We don't need to unpack that whole conversation. I just really prefer like the calm way that they talked about the pros and cons of sending Fringilla somewhere versus sending Yen. Back and forth with Sabrina and Stregobor and Vilgefortz, like, it was too much. I was having a hard time following it, and I have a decent understanding of all the factions. And I think that that's part of the problem with how the show is unpacking and laying out the political conflicts. And again, I think I said this last week, we said it last season, the books are not super clear on the political stuff. So the show, I think, is already working with source material that is confusing at times. But I think that this type of back exchange makes it even more confusing.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And you know,
especially since we just met the Northern Kings and Queens last season, and briefly at that. Like, they didn't have any real, like, we've known Foltis from season one, but that's pretty much it. Like, we met almost every other monarch last season and only briefly, and that includes Emir. All the monarchs have been kind of behind the scenes, and so it's hard for me to understand what it means that like Henstelt doesn't want to send aid to Foltis, because I don't know Henstelt at all.
It's almost impossible. Because it wasn't something that really popped out to me till we discussed it, until I watched again. Like, it's almost impossible. And I think that they are this season, but I will give them credit for is this season. Although the Witcher quit, and you know, who knows what's going to happen. This season, they have really started laying the groundwork in a way where, outside of just the cool magic and the action and all of the characters that I love, I'm starting to understand the continent politics a little bit more. You know what I mean? Like, it's starting to feel like, oh, okay, this feels like they've done some work on the political side. Because, like, I'll be honest, we've had this conversation. The reason I love The Witcher was about characters, not about the world so much. The world is pretty much a crappy place to live, and I don't really understand what's happening in the political stuff. The reason I love Thrones is exactly the opposite. I love characters, some characters, a lot more than others, but I do love the world, and I understand the politics pretty freaking clearly. Like, it's like, that's the whole part of it. So I think, like, this season is the first time I kind of felt it was closer to other worlds that I love. Like, even like Atla, I understand the politics and what's going on there very clearly. I started understanding the politics more this season.
I think that's true. I just think that, again, they made some missteps early on that make it a little bit muddled. And maybe it's not important, right? Maybe it doesn't matter if, like, we know the motivations of every individual king and queen. Like, maybe that's not important. We obviously have insight into Vizimir's court, and that seems to be the most important at the time, at this moment. So I found that conversation with the mages to be more confusing than anything. And I think it's going to matter later in the season that these alliances aren't super clear.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that the introduction to the Redanian court, that's really like a big deal, is what's up with Radovid, comma, Prince. And what's going on and Yaskier. Like, this is like something's brewing, and Yaskier is plotting. Like, what's going on with Yaskier? Yaskier's had a strategic glow up this season. He's actually playing in the game.
Yeah. I have to organize my thoughts. But first of all, Radovid's introduction, incredible stuff. Yeah. Incredible stuff. Radovid, comma, Prince. incredible stuff. I appreciated it so much. Especially since Philippa is like out here just being like, bruh, do what we told you to do. Yeah, like, if you don't do it, you're gonna get got. Like, Radovid is actually a really skilled political actor. And what I like about the way that Yaskier is being written this season is that he may not be his equal, but he's meeting him, right? Where like he's trying to be smart about this too. He's not just going with the flow. And he's also trying to be smart about how he talks to Geralt about Redania. A lot of this stuff with Philippa and Yaskier and Dijkstra is from Blood of Elves. Mm-hmm. But I like that they included it here because we get more insight into, one, how Dijkstra, Philippa, and Radovid work as a unit, even though they don't work as a unit necessarily, but how the Redanian intelligence operates. Two, we get to see Yaskier in kind of a more quiet role. Like, he's not just the comic relief here. Like, he is part of this team, and he's trying to play it smart, where like Yen is the power, you know, Geralt is the strength. Yaskier is trying to play this with the intellect. And I really appreciate that. Yeah. It is kind of a glow up for him. I will say I was disappointed with his, you know, musical selection that he played for Radovid's court.
I mean, it was just some light work. He wasn't even wanting to play. He was just like, whatever. Like, okay, yeah, Like, he was kind of just, you know, I get it. It's an off night. It's like when you show up someplace and you're just trying to hang, and people are like, sing. And he's all like, nah, I'm not really sure, you know? So he kind of just pulled one out. It is what it is, you know? But you got to really bring your A game when you're out here doing what he did at Sherwood and shading Valdo Marx the way you were.
That was great. That was so good. Just promise me they won't play at my funeral.
Oh my gosh,
it's so good. He had some great moments. And like that in Sherwood, when Geralt was like, you'll be all right, I was rolling. Like, the man got shot with an arrow. He can't just drink a potion, Geralt. Didn't you give a whole lecture to Ciri about how, like, it's when she breaks bones, she can't just heal? And meanwhile, your friend gets shot in the back with an arrow, and you're like,
but that's what took me out of it a little bit, because it looked like he got shot in the back from the shot, but then it was that it hit his freaking loot. And I was like, oh, wait, did it hit the loot? Like, what? Did he get shot or did it hit the loot? Like, because it showed the loot with the arrow in it. He was like, you'll be okay, but unfortunately, and he shows the loot. And I was like, oh, so he didn't get shot. But in the shot where he gets the shot, it looks like he gets shot.
Yeah. I mean, I think probably part of the arrow stuck him, right? Yeah, I think we're supposed to understand that he probably has a very minor injury, but like an arrow injury is an arrow injury.
Exactly. It's
like, if that were Siri, the whole world would have stopped.
Oh my God.
Everyone would have been like, she needs medical aid.
because all these people, one thing that we didn't really touch on when we were talking about Cheryl, but we can now, is because every last one of these people just act like, it's weird. Like, they all want Siri, but they all act like they never have had any experience with Siri. Like, their approach is like, why are they out here trying to kidnap Siri when Dara can just like actually just be like, hey, Siri, let me walk up and talk to you. And then like try to convince her or like use your words.
Yeah. Yeah. This is perplexing to me. Okay. So Dara's obviously turned on Siri. Right?
Yeah.
That's pretty clear. Siri doesn't know that.
Exactly.
He told that to an owl. Yeah. Like, Siri doesn't know that. Like,
exactly.
So why wouldn't Francesca, knowing that she knows that Dara has, literally helped Siri escape from Syntra, mm-hmm. why wouldn't she say, okay, let's try a soft approach. Why don't you talk to Siri? I'll talk to Yen. And we'll see if Siri would be interested in joining with us. We'll tell her about her history. I just don't get it. It makes no sense that Francesca's like, let's go kidnap her.
Yeah, I don't get it. I think like that's the thing, is like nobody is willing to figure out a strategic way to deal with this that could lessen the need for force. You know what I mean? Like, they're all like, oh, we gotta get her. And my thing is, okay, let's say you kidnap her. When she's a hostage, how do you convince her that she should join your cause? You
exactly.
know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make
exactly.
any sense.
Exactly. Now, if Dara went and had a conversation with her, she may have said no. But it just seems like the Redanians have the smartest tact here, because they're actually trying to go about this with a little bit of a soft touch, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as we know, it could be possible that Rience is working for the Redanians. Mm-hmm. But they're approaching someone who knows Siri, mm-hmm. who knows Geralt, and mm-hmm. saying, hey, can you help us do this? Francesca's whole approach is bizarre to me. I don't get it. You have Dara right there.
I mean, but
right there. And like, the only people who seem to think that Siri could be delivered to them on a platter are the Brotherhood, which is, true.
Yeah.
Because Yen is out here being like,
let's go to Arethusa. Exactly. No, exactly. I mean, I think the conversation with Siri and Dara would have been interesting. I think it probably would have went something like this. Oh, Dara, good to see you. Oh my gosh, it's been so long. Wow, you've done something very interesting with your hair.
Who was doing Dara's hair?
I don't know.
Who was doing? Okay, these folks have no food, no money. And Dara's hair is like, every episode is a flex. Like,
he's getting a mean twist up. The L's have a twist up game that's immaculate. Oh my gosh, it's crazy. I'm like sitting here, she's like, wow, like your hair is fire. Like, who's doing it? Like, it's crazy. Oh my gosh.
And while we're on the topic of hair, what happened to Triss? Is Triss okay?
Triss's wig is unbelievably wild. Like she just stuck her finger in a light socket and that was it. That's the do for the day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't understand who's doing the hair on this show and why we're going in this direction. Also, since we're being shallow right now, Siri's wearing way too much makeup. Like, just
I didn't notice it until you told me, until you said it, and then now I can't unsee it. I was like, something looks different about Siri. Something looks different. You're like, Siri's wearing way too much makeup. I was like, oh, yeah.
My girl has like highlighter and bronzer. Like, she's just wearing way too much makeup. I think the one challenge is that because it's taken so long to make the show, that now it does appear that Cirilla and Yen are almost the same age. And yeah. That's a problem. I'm having a real struggle seeing them as a mother-daughter relationship. It seems more like a big sister mm-hmm. relationship. But I just think that they could have done a little bit better with with the makeup. I think she looks a little bit too old. But yeah. Anyway, these are all like pretty minor things.
Yeah, listen, super minor.
Compared to Stranger Things, this is...
They're in trouble over there. I've seen like these kids at all kinds of like out of the world like pictures. I'm like looking at Noah at protest rallies, and it's like they're grown up. They're grown people. They're grown like adults.
Yeah,
like you know what I mean.
Like Mike looked like he has a mortgage.
Yeah,
like,
that's what I'm saying.
Paying off his student loans. Like compared to that Netflix show, they're doing okay. But I do think they have a small, like, stranger... I'm calling it the Stranger Things problem, where Cirilla is... She just looks too old. Like, at this point in the book, I think Cirilla is maybe 14.
Yeah.
She looks like she's about 18, 19 here. So, I don't know.
It makes sense. She's in her early 20s, right? Isn't Freya in her early 20s, right?
She was 19 when they were filming season 2. So, yeah.
Yeah, so that makes sense. She's like looks age appropriate, the actress, but it's just for the story. She's like, yeah, definitely. They can't age her down. It's super easy to age people up. It's harder unless you're doing that computer stuff to like de-age people. Like CGI is hard.
Did we talk about her? Did we actually talk about her Black Widow moment?
No. We did
not. I'm not letting this podcast end without talking about it. I'm just not doing it. I know we're running a little over time, but I have not laughed that hard in a non like humorous part of this show ever. When Siri is fleeing the Jacopes and she leaps up and then jumps back down, she legit pulls a Natasha Romanoff. It's only so funny because this was a joke in the Black Widow movie. If you've seen that movie, you know that Yelena dragged her surrogate sister for being so over the top with her landing. This was Siri did the whole thing. She falls one arm on the ground, flicks back her hair.
It was the landing is what does it. The landing is what makes it. When you said it, I was like, oh my god, it is the Black Widow move. It's totally the landing. It's the whole thing, but the landing really sets it off. You're like, oh, okay, cool.
That scene was cool, right? Actually, the way that scene was stage was just cool in general. Even when she starts to use magic and it turns out that Yen is staying behind her, that was also cool. Like the whole thing, there was so much action in these episodes that was just really dope. Like I think they did a really good job of living up to one of the things that has been the strongest about this show, which is that the action scenes are in general really, really good.
I agree.
The choreography always makes sense. I think the problem, the stuff we talked about was mostly like the problems with the storytelling that had to happen to make these action scenes work. But otherwise they looked really, really cool. I mean, and it's really dope to see Yen, Siri, and Geralt all fighting together. I just love that part. We got a little bit of that in season 2 with Valofmir, but this was much different. Seeing the strengths of all three of them, what a team!
Mm-hmm.
What a badass team! Like Yen is a quick thinker.
Yeah.
Really like powerful sorceress, and then Siri is super brave. I mean, I keep saying this about Siri. She's just an incredibly brave young woman. Like she is outmatched often, but she doesn't care.
Yeah, no,
she just doesn't care. She's like, I guess I could die.
Yeah, whatever. Exactly. She's got so that Calanthe in her. That's what it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I like that she drew that conclusion that like she was thinking through like the role that she could play in the world, in all these conflicts, what she could do. She thought about her grandmother and she thought about, you know, how she's influenced by both her grandmother having essentially raised her, but also by her elven heritage. I just think that it's really nice to see Calanthe, who was such a like important, strong character in season one, probably one of the best characters in season one, still very present in the show. Her and Mousak.
Yeah.
They get regularly mentioned.
I agree. And I love that when she's coming to that conclusion, it's at Sherwood when they're talking about the folly of fighting. Geralt's like making the points about the folly of fighting for what you believe in. And I think that there's something about Geralt's neutrality, what Yen is talking about with like making choices and like you choose what you're going to do, and you can't go around changing everyone's destiny because it could have ripple effects. There's just like, there's something as a theme of running through this around what Ciri's experience has been. Like even when she's like, you know, there's another part that's good that I won't speak about that I'll, when we get there in the story, we can talk about, but just her references to her grandmother throughout, like she, this is not the only one. That I think like it's trying to tell us something about where this conflict is going for Ciri and the choices she's going to be confronted with to overcome the overall conflict that's happened on the continent. So
yeah, and I think that this is one, I won't say weakness because I haven't finished all the books, so I'm not quite sure where the author's going, but I do think Ciri has more agency in this show. Mm-hmm. Than she does in the books. And I really like that they're having her think through all of this stuff. I do object a little bit to the, like, I'm a princess stuff. I don't know. I don't really, that feels not right for Ciri's character. But that said, I think it's one of those kind of, like, she's acknowledging that she has a responsibility not just to herself to stay alive, but also to the people of Syntra who are now refugees. Mm-hmm. So I really like the stuff that they did with Ciri in this episode.
Yeah.
It's in these episodes, I should say, because there were two. Just really solid stuff with her character. And she has been, in my opinion, one of the sort of weak links of the show. I've always felt like I knew more about even Yaskier and who he was as a person, and Ciri was kind of just this little girl who was a pawn in a larger scheme. But I like that she's unpacking her role in the conflict, what she could do about it, if she can do anything about it. Because I think Geralt's retort to her when he says basically like, I believe in you, I just don't believe in the world, is a fair response. This is not one of those fantasy stories where everyone gets to walk off into the sunset and there's going to be some amazing happy ending. I think, you know, this is a similar to a Game of Thrones, is that this is one of those stories where there's going to be a lot of losses and pain and suffering before we get to the conclusion. And maybe Ciri can't make that impact that she wants to. Maybe she won't have the opportunity because the world that she lives in is a cruel and difficult one.
Well, maybe she can't change the world, but maybe she can change everyone's mind about Geralt of Rivia being recast. Let's just hope. Anyway, that is going to do it for us. We are so excited to be back in this world covering The Witcher Season 3. Thank you for listening. Check us out. Leave comments wherever you listen to your podcast. Also, you can reach out to us on KinFolklorePod on Instagram and KinFolklorePod on Twitter. And you can go ahead and join our Facebook community also, KinFolklore Podcast over on Facebook. So until next week, we will see you where we will cover episodes 3 and 4. Thanks, everyone.
Bye, everyone.